out to do. Stand,
there's a cross for you to bear.
Things to go through if you are going anywhere.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Website, thericksmithshow.com. So today, Dr. Martin Luther King would have been 89 years old. And one of the tweets that I saw that grabbed my attention said, yes, we should remember the legacy of Dr. King, but we should also remember the legacy of his wife, who without her, there wouldn't have been an MLK Jr. Day, which I think is equally important. There wouldn't have been the King Center in Atlanta, which when we did our civil rights tour, one of the places that we stopped at. And again, you know, just incredible monuments and memorials in places where just some really heinous and horrible things happened. And I highly suggest it if you're in Atlanta, just like the places that we went through Birmingham and through Montgomery and through Greensboro. And, you know, you go through the list of all the places through history where there was something horrible that happened. There is now a tourism industry that sprung up around it. Anyway, here to get some thoughts on the S-hole comments and the thought process that goes into it. And, oh, by the way, it's been almost a year since we had Propane Jane on saying there's something going on between the ears and it's something wrong. Got some folks in D.C. now finally a year later coming around to it. Anyway, let's find out what's going on with our good friend Propane Jane. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back and happy MLK Day.
As well to you. And, you know, I look at this and, you know, one of the things, you know, back in 2015, we did a civil rights tour where we traveled the entire South and went to just places that, history were horrible places, and now it's turned into a tourism industry where, hey, we were horrible, but we're better now. Come bring your money.
Yeah. They you know. Now, I don't know how that's going to work out with the removal of the Confederate statues and how, you know, if you think about if that ultimately, if they take them down and end up putting them in a museum, that would be a very interesting parallel, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm okay with them putting it in a museum. I mean, if we went to the Confederate White House,
yeah,
which was kind of bizarre to me. I mean, if you, but you know, we were there, and you know, the woman who was the curator was, you know, was pushing the whole. She was a little kooky, yeah, as my wife points out. But you know, she was pointing out that it had nothing to do with slavery. We loved the slaves. It was about our rights to have slaves.
Oh, of course. You know what? I actually heard a couple of weeks ago. I read this in Talking Points memo that. And I forget what state it was, but someone was attempting to erect some type of monument to Confederate soldiers that were black, or I guess I should say black men that fought alongside the Confederates.
Right. No, I've heard that, and I heard a lot of it, especially from her. And I think they even had a book there that said that there were some.
Yeah, and apparently, you know, I think that someone has, like, sort of reinvigorated that idea in light of all of this controversy and the movement to take them down. And they sort of, you know, offered this up as, like, a compromise. Like, well, hey, what if we put up black guys that fought for the Confederacy? Would that make it okay? And then what actually happened was, like, you know, the white supremacists said, no, that's actually not going to work. We're not okay with that.
No, of course not. Because... But here's the thing. I mean, you know, if there were, and because I had heard that there, I heard that there was upwards of 20,000. And I said, well, weren't they slaves? Weren't they ordered to do it? And if they didn't, couldn't they be killed?
We're not supposed to talk about that.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure. But, you know, it brings up this interesting point because, you know, one of the first stops we did on the tour was in Durham, North Carolina at this plantation where they've turned into kind of a working museum kind of educational facility. And, you know, the woman who gave us the tour, you know, amazing person, you know, pointed out this weird kind of world that as they were showing us the slave quarters, mm-hmm. which were very well built and even to this day, very well insulated. And she said, you know, now imagine across the fence over there, you've got the poor whites who are living in shacks and they're just, they're starving and all of this stuff, but they still think they're better than the people who live and work in this environment who were treated, you know, a lot better than they were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things where I just, it made me stop and think about, you know, how bizarre is it that, You're starving, and yet you think you're still better than the person across the fence.
You know, the interesting thing is it's not so bizarre. It's actually the Southern strategy. It's actually what's been keeping the Republican Party afloat for the last 50 years. And, you know, we see it over and over again, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago with this tax scam bill, that, you know, the white working class, you know, during the election, there was all this talk about economic anxiety, and that they, you know, allegedly were voting for Trump because he was going to bring them economic prosperity. And clearly, you know, a year into this, all that we're seeing is, you know, jobs being cut. None of the promises that were made to the coal miners are being kept. And so essentially they've been swindled. And the crux of that swindle was racial resentment. I mean, you know, when he came down the escalator, he said, you know, they're not sending their best. They're sending rapists. And that was actually, you know, we're talking about, there's been so much talk about his immigration policy. You know, given his recent comments. But that was his immigration policy when he came down that escalator, was we're going to ban Muslims and we don't want any Mexicans over here and we're going to build a wall. And that's what he campaigned on for 2 years.
Right.
And so, you know, it's really not surprising that we end up here almost a year past his inauguration that, you know, here he's now saying, you know what hole.
Yeah, well, let me ask you the other side of this then, because, you know, could it be, and to give him the benefit of a doubt, could it be he just doesn't want poor people around?
No, because I think he was pretty explicit in what he said, or at least, you know, because now there's all this controversy about what was said, and, you know, because nobody wants to admit to what they actually heard. They all suddenly have selective amnesia.
And that they did nothing when they heard it.
Well, exactly. And how do you go and sit in a meeting with the you know, quote-unquote president of the United States and you don't remember what was discussed? How is that even possible? But beyond that, you know, what was included in the commentary was not just the derogatory comments about these countries that are predominantly populated by brown people. There was also this sentiment of, why aren't we bringing in more Europeans? Why aren't we bringing in people from Norway?
Because they have national health care.
Well, exactly. You know, but he definitely, I think, registered his preference for, you know, an Aryan nation of sorts.
Yeah, let me ask you this then, because, you know, Norway's interesting to me because he had just done a press conference the day before with the leader of Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And there's part of me that goes, that's just what was on his mind. There wasn't any thought put into it. It was just, oh, I remember the woman from Norway yesterday, and threw Norway out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it certainly could have been, you know, something that was on the tip of his tongue. But at the same time, you know, we are dealing with an administration that has a pattern of white supremacy. We're talking about an administration that employs Stephen Miller and used to employ Steve Bannon. And so it's not just that Trump himself is saying, you know, racist things every now and then. It's the fact that he has surrounded himself with people who have made white supremacist comments. There have been countless photos that have been taken of White House staff, and when they have these interns in and RNC staffers, and, you know, every now and then there's somebody throwing up a white power sign. So this is very pervasive, not only within the administration, but even if you look back to who was showing up to his rallies during the campaign, and how many Confederate flags there were, and how many Confederate marches and KKK marches and neo-Nazi marches have sprung up in response to this presidency. So I think that he doth protest too much when he tries to completely extricate himself from this white supremacy and racism.
Yeah, there's part of me that goes, you know, this is one of those things I'm surprised he hasn't taken credit for. I mean, he has caused
I am too.
He's caused a giant S storm, if you will.
Yeah.
with his S hole comment.
Yeah.
And it's reported that he is tickled pink over it.
Oh, Oh, for sure. Because, I mean, everybody's talking about him.
So wouldn't it be, you know, wouldn't it behoove him to go, yeah, I said it, and really, like, double, like he normally does, double down on it?
You know, I think that, you know, there is something about racism, and again, we talked about this a couple of months ago, that people can, you know, it's very interesting that they will espouse very racist things, but when you actually attach the word racist or racism to it, then suddenly, you know, people are like, well, no, that's actually not what I'm saying here. So it's something about the negative connotation of the word that he doesn't want to own. He knows that that is like a bad word. And so he's, you know, he's going to deny it. And he's basically, you know, what he said yesterday was he's the least racist person he knows, which I'm not really sure if that means he's like not racist at all, or if it's just that
he hangs around, you know, with really racist people.
Yeah, but he just hangs around with Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon. And then in that case, it's sort of relative. I mean, I don't know, but this issue continues to follow him, and it continues to be an albatross around his neck, not just because of, you know, these one-off flippant comments. It's because of his policy. It's because of the movements that he's sparking up on his coattails as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to watch and how obsessed he's been about it. I mean, this is one of those things that it's lasted a couple of days, and most of these dust-ups, most of these flare-ups, they don't last this long.
Yeah, and you know, I think the reason why this one is lasting a little bit longer is because, again, it's tied to the immigration policy. And, you know, again, in terms of the legislative agenda that they're attempting to roll out, it basically is an ineffective policy. I mean, it's something that is very unpopular. It's unpopular even amongst Republicans. And if you know, if we can think back to, you know, the 2012 election and their postmortem they did at that time when they were, you know, allegedly knew that they needed to do minority outreach and knew that they needed to get some support from Hispanic voters. If you kind of think back to that point, I mean, they are aware that their stance on immigration is actually alienating voters that they need to bring into the fold. But at the same time, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place because the base of the Republican Party is anti-immigrant. And so really, they can't really move to make some of these practical decisions in terms of DACA, you know, that actually, you know, would have long-lasting impacts for our economy, right, and the health of our nation. They can't actually do that because, you know, they have the white supremacists breathing down their necks. And so I think for Trump, it sort of behooves him to say, oh, well, the whole thing's out of the window because the Democrats lied about me and said that I said this, and they're not serious about it anyway because they made a big stink about, you know, stupid little comments.
Yeah, Dickie Durbin.
Exactly, right? And so then you can sort of scapegoat Dick Durbin, and you can scapegoat the Democrats, and you can say that they're really the reason why he won't come to the table on immigration. But really, I mean, you know, when you actually look at the nuts and bolts of it, I mean, he's trying to get this wall built. I mean, and that's totally preposterous. And there's no way you can really fit that into this legislation. And so, especially on the heels of the tax bill where they've already exploded the deficit, and they still haven't explained how they're going to pay for the wall. So they really are trying to mix like oil and water to even get this immigration policy off the ground. And so that's why I think he's just kind of throwing his hands up and making it a reality TV show type drama.
Yeah. Again, he's one of those things that it just seems so convenient that, you know, evil genius, he had to almost plan it out. But in how they're going to pay for it, obviously, is they're going to kick all those people off of Medicaid and whatever we can use from that. That's what they'll build the wall with.
Oh, yeah. Anything that is, you know, sociopathic and unempathetic, they are going to try to roll out at this point. And if that means, you know, slashing the social safety net, that's kind of like a 2-for-1 because they've always wanted to do that anyway. And, you know, at this point, I think that Trump is sort of, you know, I always say he's decompensating and devolving, and he's getting worse as time goes on.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, with this Mueller investigation ratcheting up and not actually going away anytime soon, and actually just growing larger and larger as each week goes on, I think that he's really just going to continue to get bogged down in these emotional battles and these very petty kind of back and forth spats with people, because he really can't focus on any of the issues at hand because the Republican Party is dysfunctional. And in a lot of ways, his administration is illegitimate from a legal standpoint, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly can't believe we're here.
I can't either.
But
yeah, I can't either.
You know, you think about this last year, which has gone by, what seems like almost forever and almost in a blink of the eye at the same time.
Right, right. It's gone by. It feels like it's gone by very fast. But I think it probably is, you know, according to all of these, you know, Republican retirements and refusals to seek reelection, it can't be over with fast enough for some of these members of the Republican Party, which I think is quite interesting.
And yet I still don't want him impeached because I fear the other guy much more than I fear him, which I think says a lot about the other guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it says a lot about the other guy, but I also think that it says a lot about the entire line of succession, actually. Because, you know, as these retirements, like I said, and you know, kind of defections keep going, you have to sort of sit back and think, okay, they have all three branches of government. I mean, can you imagine if this had been, you know, Barack Obama and he had the Senate and the House?
They did for 2 years.
Well, exactly, but I mean, they didn't have what the Republicans have had with Trump. I mean, they've had a smooth walk in the park. You know, they're not this whole reconciliation and 51 votes, and you know, they've had a really easy time of just getting Pence in there when they needed him to.
The difference was you know, I have to remind people, 2009 was a difficult year.
Yeah.
We were in the middle of a free fall collapse.
Yeah.
And while the Democrats did have 59, almost 60 votes until Kennedy died and all of that, and they did have the House, and we were in free fall.
Yeah.
And the Democrats were still trying to reach out to the Republicans. I argue the reason the health care bill is as bad as it is because Democrats kept reaching out to Republicans going, here, we'll give you this if you'll vote for it, knowing that they were never going to vote for it.
Yeah, they're never going to vote for it. But I think what is kind of most striking, though, is that what they weren't doing was just flat out retiring and giving up. And there really isn't a good explanation going around for why these really big name people have just suddenly decided. Now, is it because they've, you know, it's a smash and grab and, you know, they just passed the tax bill and so they're cutting and running?
Yep.
And I
have to remind everyone. If, you know, all of my Republican friends and T-Twizzler idiots who say, you know, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare was rammed down our throats, about 11 months, officially, I checked with Guinness, the longest ramming down in history.
Yeah.
That tax bill was done in a matter of a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And we still don't even really know anything about it or what the implications are going to be.
And neither do they.
Exactly. Neither do they. So obviously, on the one hand, people sort of have this theory of like, okay, well, maybe they're afraid of their constituents and they know there's going to be a backlash. But I've never, you know, I don't think the Republicans would be afraid of that. I mean, that hasn't stopped them up until this point.
Nope.
And so, you know, it's like, have they reached a point where they don't want to have to stand in 2018 in support of Donald Trump? Is it that they know that there's some legal thing going on behind the scenes in terms of the Mueller investigation that we don't yet know, but maybe coming down the pike, you know, in the coming weeks and months? Or is this a situation where they just literally don't want to be in Congress with instability in chief, which I wouldn't necessarily blame them?
No, I think they see the writing on the wall. I think this year is going to be a bloodbath. I think. I you know, every Republican I talk to is demoralized, and it's not even a, hey, I got to get out and vote for the team. it's, you know, there's a 36% approval rating of this president for a reason.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. And I think that, you know, again, you know, I get into these back and forths, and you've seen me out there on Twitter. You know, there's always sort of this kind of vilification, I think, in some ways, of mental health professionals and psychiatrists that have spoken out about Trump's mental health. And ultimately, you know, this is a situation where he is behaving in ways that are basically the antithesis of what we expect from a president. That's the first piece of it.
Right. But you know, on the other side of that, you know, that's why some people elected him. You know,
of course.
In fact,
I
met a number of Bernie supporters who voted for him simply because he was going to burn the place down.
Yeah, and they like that. And I, you know, I called them today narcissist or sociopath bait. You know, there are certain people that are just going to be bait for the narcissists and sociopaths of the world. That's just, that's the unfortunate reality. It's like I always talk about Ted Bundy and Charles Manson having women lining up to be their wives. They really did. I mean, there were women that wanted to marry them, even knowing that they were, you know, serial killers. So again, there are people who just have a hook for a really toxic narcissist or a really toxic sociopath. And at least in America, we can sort of estimate that maybe that number is about 62 million that voted for Donald Trump. I mean, I have no other way to explain that, because ultimately he behaved in the way he's behaving now, you know, in very similar ways during the campaign. And they were okay with all of that. And were okay with his history, you know, his four-decade history that he's had in the public eye. That has been very demonstrative of those really maladaptive, like, personality traits. But beyond that, I think that even if we just sort of get past what we expect from a president, he just doesn't behave the way, like, our social norms inform us that we should behave. You know, we tell our children not to do, like, all of the stuff that Donald Trump does on a daily basis. And that's why so very few people approve of what he's doing. And unfortunately, you know, the Republicans are just choosing to stick with the party line,
right,
rather than to go with what the, you know, majority of the country feels right now, which is sheer embarrassment.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, you know, one would argue that he didn't get to where he's at by following the rules. In fact, you know, my wife and I have this conversation about our kids. You know, we've raised them with very, you know, very working class values.
Mm-hmm.
Show up on time, work hard, be respectful, you know, follow the rules, you know, stand in the straight line when you're supposed to, as where, you know, some of our, you know, wealthier friends are, no, you cut in front of the line, lie, cheat, steal, do whatever you got to do to get ahead.
Right.
And you go, you know, which one's better or worse for our children in the future?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's. I was thinking about this today because I was just saying to myself, I don't have a dog in this fight anymore because my Texans lost. You know, they didn't even make it to the playoffs this season. But I was just telling somebody that if the Patriots make it to the Super Bowl again, I'm not watching it. and no offense to Patriots fans. But I remember getting into this, like, sort of back and forth with my husband in the year when there was the whole Deflategate, and that was sort of following another year where there was all this controversy about were they videotaping the other sidelines, hand signals, et cetera, et cetera. And I was just saying that, to me, it, you know, it sort of puts a stink on the whole, you know, Patriots dynasty, that there's this, like, question of illegitimacy or cheating or, you know, whatever. And so we had this back and forth about, you know, well, but they win. You know, they win, and they've,
yep,
won all these championships. So ultimately, you know, why are you sort of hating on it? You know, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, just I don't like that. You know, I mean, I want it to be a fair fight.
Well, the other argument would be the other teams could do the same thing. You know, they
well,
could.
Exactly, right? I mean, again, there and you know, I think in our society and in every society, there are people who sort of believe a certain way, and then there are other people who believe the other way. And that's really the challenge when you're talking about narcissistic people or sociopathic people, is that in a lot of ways, what some of us are viewing as maladaptive behaviors from them there are plenty of people that think that, you know, that's very shrewd and that's just the way to get ahead. And somebody like Trump, you know, no matter how many reports we get about, okay, well, this was vulture capitalism and there was housing discrimination and he did these backroom deals financially, you know, there's still such a large subset of our society that glorifies that and says, well, you know, he's just a shrewd businessman and of course he should be president if he can do that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If he can do that, what's he going to do to us?
Well, but they didn't think that, right?
That's the first thing I think.
Yeah, but they, you know, they never think about that until it's too late, right? I mean, it's like the woman who gets in the car with Ted Bundy, right?
Exactly,
I mean, he's charming and he's handsome and he's, you know, everything. He's all your wildest dreams until the moment that he strangles you, right? I mean, and so that's the thing. I think, you know, when I talk from the standpoint of a clinician. You know, I understand that, you know, at any given moment, hey, you know, he seems to be keeping it together just fine. But what happens in that moment when he's not and he actually is pressing the button? And this, you know, alarm that's going off in Hawaii isn't just a false alarm. It's actually a real thing. And I think that's why that experience was so scary for those people, because they know, you know, instability in chief is in the White House,
yeah.
And he's been talking about this.
You
got to
wonder
if
Obama was still in the White House, if they would have been as panicked.
Right. I mean, you know, I think for those 38 minutes, I would be terrified. You know, given what we know about this president and what he continues to sort of instigate week after week after week. And so you don't know what you're going to get. But you do know that it's going to be unstable. Like I said, almost a year ago, right? You know that it's going to be problematic. And it's just kind of an accident waiting to happen perpetually.
So last question I've got for you, and looking at today, you know, every president for the last several has said, you know, today should be a day of service. President Trump went golfing. Any surprise?
Yes, he did. I am not surprised. And what I'll say is I'm actually glad that he didn't insult what would have been black people in the D.C. area by actually going to some, you know, sort of front event that they put up for him to, you know, some photo op. You know, maybe I have PTSD from Hurricane Harvey and him writing on our wall and NRG and, you know, all that stuff that he did when he was down here for Harvey. But I'm glad that he actually didn't insult people on that day by actually trying to go and participate in something that his heart genuinely is not in.
Yeah, I thought so. He put a wreath on something or did something at one of the monuments, but it was real quick.
Good. I'm glad.
Stay
on the golf course. Don't do anything else disastrous. You know, at least give us this day to not have to deal with that foolishness.
And then replicate that for the next 365 plus 365 and all the way until the end.
I'm not even giving him that long. I want him out before then.
All righty. Well,
we don't need to be having this conversation a year from now, Rick.
Look, as I said before, there are some people who are on the impeachment bandwagon. I am not one of them. Simply because I don't want Mike Pence in the White House. I do not want that crazy theocrat sitting behind the desk in the Oval Office. I'll take this guy because at least we can see how crazy he is.
We're going to have to do a head-to-head comparison next week, maybe.
All I got to do is say is look at what happened. Look at what they just found out in California. I'll bet you those people were crazy religious nuts.
Oh, I'm sure.
There you go. Jane, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Have a great week.
Great talking with you. Our good friend Propane Jane. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the time.
Smith Show.